world dawns in which a Chrysler 6.4-liter V8 Hemi engine is really a Fiat? From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Fiat of Turin has reached a $4.3 billion deal to buy the rest of Chrysler of Auburn Hills, that's in Michigan. The Auto Workers Union could have sold its stake to the public in a stock offering, but instead Fiat is pleased it gets to buy it directly. Marketplace's David Gura reports.
Fiat's wanted this for years. Michelle Krebs is an analyst with Edmunds.com.
The main reason is it'll allow them to fully integrate as one company.
Fiat hopes this will make it easier for them to compete with companies like Toyota and Volkswagen. Perhaps more importantly, Fiat desperately needs some of Chrysler's cash. Dave Sullivan is an analyst with Auto Pacific, and he says Europe's anemic economy has not been good for auto sales.
Chrysler's really helping to keep Fiat afloat during these difficult times.
Fiat's relationship with Chrysler goes back to 2009 when Chrysler was in bankruptcy.
I mean, you could say that Fiat was basically gifted a stake in Chrysler.
The rest of the company went to the UAW Retiree Medical Benefits Trust. Sullivan says that trust had considered an IPO to sell those shares.
That was really a hardball tactic.
With this agreement, that won't happen. The UAW will sell those shares in a deal that's valued at more than $4 billion. I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
Now, you've seen Google's robot car. You may know that some high-end vehicles have robotic features, such as adaptive cruise control that uses radar to automatically maintain following distance and traffic. But self-driving could become big business in the next two decades. A new forecast by IHS Automotive predicts that by 2035, self-driving vehicles will account for 9% of global sales. That's about 12 million vehicles. Predictions like this so far out can be fraught. After all, we were supposed to be getting to work on monorails and jetpacks by now. Starting today, people who take the high school equivalency exam will face a test that's supposedly tougher and will only be offered via computer, no more paper and number two pencil. The test was created in 1942, at first to help military veterans get higher education without forcing them to return to high school after the experience of war. Emily Hanford, education correspondent for our documentary unit here, American Radio Works, joins us. Emily, good morning.
Good morning.
All right, remind me, who takes this test?
So this is a test for people who have dropped out of high school, and it's a second chance. People taking the test are looking for an opportunity to finish what they didn't finish because they want and they need a high school credential to get a job or to go to college. And it's really huge. 12% of all high school credentials issued in the United States every year are GED certificates.
And so now an overhaul is coming to the test. Why now?
So the organization that runs the GED, it's the American Council on Education, they decided a few years ago it was time for a change. And this was part of a larger effort to raise education standards. You've probably heard about the Common Core state standards. So there's an effort going on across the country to sort of raise the stakes, raise the standards in school. So this new GED test is part of that effort. It will be less multiple choice. There'll be more writing. And the test makers say it will assess critical thinking skills in a way that the old test does not.
Well, you and I are both for critical thinking, but another key issue here is, does making the test lead to more people being prepared for the workplace of the future, right?
Right. So we do know that jobs require more skills, and this is very important to have good reading, writing, math skills. But what the research has really helped to prove is that it takes a lot more than smarts to make it on the job and even to make it in college. There are all these other skills. Persistence, working hard, getting along with people.
So you have the cognitive skills, but you also have the getting your act together in life skills.
Yeah, precisely. And those really matter. And these are things that a test, a primarily multiple choice test or any test, really don't measure. But finishing high school does measure these tests. So if you think about what it takes to finish high school, it takes a certain amount of persistence and working hard and getting along with people. And what the GED test shows is that people who pass the test have a decent level of cognitive skills, but what they don't have on average are these other skills.
The thing is, are those skills teachable?
Well, there's a lot of conversation about that, but there is a significant amount of research that indicates that they are. And the question is how to teach them and how to teach them at scale. We have almost 40 million people who don't have a high school diploma in this country. So the question is, what do we really need to do for them? And is a test enough?
American Radio Works education correspondent Emily Hanford, thank you very much.
Thank you.
want to see Marketplace live? You can enter to win a chance to join us at the Norse Theater in San Francisco on January 28th as we discuss the new era of philanthropy. Details and rules at marketplace.org/trip. The number of lenders going after houses for unpaid mortgages is way down from the worst of the real estate crisis. But early this new year, some places may see a jump in foreclosure sales. That's because cases that have been slowly working their way through the legal system are now hitting the market, as Kate Davidson reports.
In almost half of states, foreclosures have to go through court. That's to protect homeowners, but these judicial foreclosures sometimes take years. Tom O'Grady is CEO of Protect Services, which analyzes housing data. He says foreclosure is quicker in non-judicial states.
Kind of like ripping the Band-Aid off instead of pulling it off slowly.
Non-judicial states worked through their foreclosure pain up front, says Dave Stevens. He's head of the Mortgage Bankers Association.
The home values were depressed much quicker, much faster, but now they're in significant recovery.
He says, just look at double-digit appreciation in places like Phoenix, Arizona.
That's going to be very different in states like New York, New Jersey, and Florida, where they have now the backlogs that are just hitting the market.
Foreclosures sell for about 30% less than non-distressed sales. And when there are lots of foreclosures in the market, they pull down the value of the homes around them. That means in this time of housing recovery, some communities may be left behind for now. I'm Kate Davidson for Marketplace.
And Walmart said today it's recalling donkey meat it sells in China for people to eat. The world's largest retailer is also working with local authorities to investigate its Chinese supplier. Tests show the donkey meat in China contains DNA of foxes and other critters. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.